Hello, you are now listening to The Mothership with me, Josie Booth, on Radio Reverb. On this month's episode, we are chatting with Zivira, author of the worldwide best-selling book on baby development, The Wonder Weeks. Should you let a baby cry it out? She'll be filling us in on that a little bit later. We also have the lovely Dr. Tristan shattering more myths for us, and our local panel of ladies who'll be chatting about growth spurts, babies being stuck on their nipples, and much, much more. So I hope you enjoy listening.
This thing came from outer space.
The Mothership on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
It's not that time again.
Come in.
It's Dr. Tristan.
Good morning, Josie.
Hi. It's been a while.
It has.
We've missed you.
Have you forgotten about me?
No, not at all. In fact, we've been inundated with our listeners getting in touch, asking where you were, because you're such a loved guest on the show. Well, you're not really a guest. You're kind of part of the furniture now.
Thank you.
So we're keen to get some more advice, if that's okay.
Excellent. Not a problem.
Feeling up to the challenge?
I think so, yes.
Good. Okay. We're going to kick off straight from one of our lovely listeners. It is Jenny from Hanover. She messaged in to say her daughter has been diagnosed with scarlet fever. Now, I actually don't know what scarlet fever is. What is it? Can you give us a...
Right, well, yes, it's one of the more common childhood infections. It's quite an important one to spot, actually. It's what we call a notifiable disease. So the
right.
Department of Health wants to... Well, Public Health England wants to know about it. It's an important infection, and it's been on the increase in recent years, and I'm not sure if they know exactly why. Basically, it's a bacterial infection. It seems to sort of peak in winter and spring. It gives you a very nasty sore throat, tonsillitis, and sort of a characteristic red rash on your cheeks.
Right, OK. So are we talking life or death here, or is it kind of manageable?
Not really. I mean, it needs antibiotics. It is very treatable if treated promptly. I mean, it can make children very poorly. Like I said, it can give you a fever, and, left unchecked can make children very ill.
Right, OK. Thank you for that. Jenny, I hope that has somehow kind of quashed your fear. We've received an anonymous message via the Radio Reverb website by a listener who wanted your advice on best remedies for hand, foot and mouth on her baby. Now, I've heard that bandied around the place, and it sounds very serious, is it?
Well, I think it's probably quite easily confused with foot and mouth,
aha,
which, as we all remember, was quite unpleasant if you were a sheep or a cow all those years ago. But, you know, rest assured, the human, well, the hand, foot and mouth is different, is not the same thing.
Right.
It's a viral infection. You know, it gives people fevers and it makes them feel unwell. And then you get these characteristic sort of blisters that appear in your hands, feet and mouth.
Okay.
So it's what we call self-limiting. It gets better by itself after about a week. You just need to treat the fever, keep hydrated. So it's not really serious at all.
Is it quite an irritating one for a little nipper?
It can be. I mean, the sort of rash or blisters can get quite sore sometimes and occasionally get infected with the bacteria as well. So if they look nasty, then perhaps get them checked by your doctor.
I guess generally, if your little one is looking, you know, it's got some weird ailments physically, if it looks pretty minging, then I'd assume that that's a sign that it's bad. Is that accurate, or sometimes do they have quite ugly looking things that are
well
fine?
It's difficult in children. Obviously they don't always tell us how they're feeling, and because they're young, you know, young strong bodies, they can compensate quite a lot for these illnesses. So sometimes they're quite ill when, you know, by the time they look ill, they're actually really very ill. So
actually our little nippers are pretty hardcore.
They are very tough, yeah, but it sort of all goes wrong very suddenly if they're very poorly.
Don't say that, our listeners don't want to hear that. Okay, fine. So something that I personally experienced with my son a while ago, it was the month of the cold. He did have a permanent cold from the start of November. What's going on with that?
I think it's very common. I think lots of parents think that their baby or child is just constantly ill, you know, for months in a row. But actually, they're probably just getting an illness after an illness after an illness. And
right.
I think the average for a child is between 8 and 12 illnesses a year.
What, colds and snotty noses?
Yeah, sort of cold and snotty noses. And if they have them all over winter, that's one every 2 weeks. So it does seem a bit
back
relentless.
To back.
Yes, yes.
And specific times that might be kind of, you know, these flare up more kind of like the winter months. Is there any specific?
Yeah, when the weather changes, I guess, when it gets cold, I mean, there's a few things to watch out for. There's something called bronchiolitis.
I was actually going to ask about that because I know there's bronchitis and then, but bronchiolitis is a bit more serious.
Bronchiolitis. So that sort of peaks in November, December time every year.
Right.
It's a viral infection. It looks like a cold, really runny nose, nasty cough. But because it affects the very small airways in your lungs, some children get quite poorly and have problems breathing. And it's, you know, you should notice that you hear them wheezing and you'll see their little tummies and chests working away and sort of drawing in underneath the rib cage, showing that they're working hard. It's usually quite mild and most kids get over it fairly quickly over the course of a week or two, but some children do struggle and do need to go to hospital to get some help with their breathing.
Right, okay. And so I guess the kind of key difference between that and a normal cold is that kind of breathing and the
wheezing.
It's
the breathing,
wheeziness.
Yeah. Yeah, you should be able to spot that. It's fairly obvious.
Oh, the poor little blighters. They're just, you know, back-to-back illnesses, especially over these winter periods. So are there any telltale signs of ailments that are quite serious that we need to know about?
Yeah, we use a kind of what's called a traffic light system. So there's sort of things that are green, you know, things that we can see which are amber, and then we've got these sort of red flags, which are the really important ones, which means that the children are quite poorly. So if your child looks sort of very pale and mottled, that's quite an important sign to look for. Also, if your child's not responding, I mean, I think most people would probably react fairly quickly to that if they couldn't.
Certainly,
you know,
with my noisy
them.
Little bugger.
yeah. If they go from screaming to very quiet, then that's always not such a good sign. They, like I said earlier about the breathing, so if you can see their little tummies sucking in under their ribs and really working hard or grunting or making noises like that, that needs checking as well. And then I guess there's the rashes, so everyone knows about, you know, the rashes that don't blanch or don't disappear when you put a glass over. That can be two things. One of them is meningitis, fortunately really rare. I've only ever seen that rash once, and that was about 10 years ago. But it's very important. If you ever have a bit of rash, it doesn't go away, straight to A&E with that one, or call an ambulance, actually.
And so what is this test? Because, you know, some mums might not have heard of it. So you put a glass on the...
So if you can see the rash, if you get a glass and just press it against the rash, it should disappear. If it's a harmless rash or part of a viral infection, it'll disappear when you press the glass or stretch the skin. If it doesn't go away, it needs to be checked, you know, immediately, and calling an ambulance if you've got a poorly child with a temperature and a rash that doesn't go away. I'd just call 999.
And I can imagine that everyone is pretty sympathetic and understanding, any of the kind of paramedics and people.
Oh, of course, they would be delighted to be called out for something like that.
Yeah.
So don't feel like you're wasting anyone's time.
Fantastic, that's what we like to hear. Finally, one last one for you before we get into the myth section of this month. When would a child be most vulnerable to chicken pox? Is it quite dangerous for the smaller babies to catch?
I guess any age for chicken pox.
Right.
It can be a bit dangerous for very, very tiny babies. So, you know, less than 3 weeks or even less than 3 months, babies' immune systems aren't that strong. So you have to, they're usually fine. You just have to keep a close eye. But it's actually as you get older with chicken pox, it can cause you more problems. So if you get it as an adult, it's quite an unpleasant thing. But again, it's something that you get over, your body fights it off, and then you shouldn't get it again, hopefully.
Fantastic. Well, as always, Dr. Tristan, you've kind of settled some of my concerns there. So now it is time for the one and only... Yes, it is Myth of the Month. Are you ready?
I'm excited.
Good. Just, you know, hold on to your seat, brace yourself. Because we've got three myths for you, so I'm sure you will smash these for us. So this whole thing about, you know, from the minute a baby's born, they're 1 month or 2 months or 3 months, there's signs of drooling and like lots of whining and hands near mouths maybe. Is that always a sign that they're teething very early on?
Teething's a funny thing, I think. I probably have to call a bit of a myth on that one. So,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, lots of people trying to attribute all manner of things to teething. I mean, it does upset a lot of things. But around 3 months, actually, what's happening is your baby's starting to produce more saliva. They're not actually about to grow any teeth at that stage. I mean, some babies can, and some babies are born with teeth, but
really?
It's very rare.
Gosh, so a newborn like is sucking on mum's breast for the first time with teeth. That sounds horrendous.
But yeah, I guess, and at 3 months, babies are exploring the world with their mouths. It's more for a sensory experience. So yeah, they'll be drooling and trying to bite everything, and they'll be cranky just because at 3 months, babies get cranky and stop sleeping so well. It's kind of part of their natural development. So
right.
I guess the important thing there is to not give them paracetamol and painkillers, because they're not really in pain. It's just they're part of their development.
Right. Okay. Fine.
And I think importantly, certainly don't try to give them food at that point either. So even if you know, babies are drooling and look like they're teething, they're really not ready for food right. Until they're about 6 months.
Funny you should say that, because that was my second myth.
Oh right.
Just
okay.
Gone and quashed before I've even asked it. So thanks for that.
Well, I guess that makes it a myth then.
Well, yes. I mean, essentially, you know, the whole idea about kind of letting babies wean quite early on, that's a no-go, or would you say kind of
six months
is that the
6 months accurate? They can't really digest the food. They don't have the enzymes in their saliva really to digest it properly. So I think, you know, around 6 months, let them experiment with food.
But beforehand, just don't do it, even if they look like they might be still a bit hungry.
I wouldn't try that before 6 months. Probably not a good idea.
Okay, fine. Well, you know, there you go. Smashed 2 in 1 go for you. So finally, the myth for you, which is all about breastfed babies.
Yeah.
So if you were to supplement a breastfed baby with formula, is that going to help them sleep?
I guess people think that formula is, you know, is a bit harder to break down. They get a bit more. Perhaps it will keep the baby fuller for longer at night time. But unfortunately, another myth. There's research that shows that babies that are breastfed, the mothers actually get a bit more sleep. I think it's only about 30 minutes,
really?
But they get more sleep. And I think the amount of times the baby stirs at night or wakes up is the same across breastfed and bottle fed babies.
But interesting, because I did think that formula fed meant that they would just be fuller for longer, because, you know, it's a bit more stodgy.
If you're going with breastfeeding, stick with exclusive breastfeeding if you can. You know, obviously it depends on your personal situation.
Well, I have to say, actually, having introduced a bit of formula myself, my baby still didn't sleep. He still doesn't sleep now, even though he's having food. So I think basically resign yourself if your baby doesn't sleep. He's never going to sleep. No, I don't want to scare you all. I'm sure all of your babies will sleep at some point, one day. Well, Dr. Tristan, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
It's been an absolute delight having you, and I'm sure we will find a way to get you back on. Ladies, if you would like to ask any questions, or gentlemen, if you're listening and you're a parent, any questions for the lovely doctor, he is always on hand to answer for you. You can just drop me a message on the Mothership Radio Reverb Facebook page. You can also drop me a message via the Radio Reverb website. Thank you very much, Doctor. We'll see you next month.
Thank you, Josie.
Radio Reverb. Radio Reverb.
For you now, we've got our interview with Zavira, author of The Wonder Weeks. Hi, Zavira, all the way over in Holland.
Hi there, thank you for calling.
So it's fair to say that babies have quite a hard time in those first couple of years. Can you explain a bit to our listeners about kind of what Wonder Weeks is and how you help babies to tackle those challenges?
Well, it's extremely right what you said. The baby have a hard time being baby. Kind of logical if you think about that, the fact that babies learn more in their first year of life than what we ever learn all these accumulated years afterwards. So they learn massively. And what we thought until recently, well, like 20 years ago, was that, you know, babies learn a little bit more every day, so more gradually. And my parents actually discovered that babies don't grow mentally, not gradually, but they grow in leaps. Suddenly, they perceive totally new things, which they just could not perceive before, which is extremely scary for them, of course, and that's sudden brain change, which is the reason, you know, you have these phases with babies in which they are more crying, more clingy, more cranky, and which are actually these leaps, they're a telltale sign of leaps are happening. They perceive different things, which is extremely scary. So they want to get back to you. They want to be with you, rediscover this whole new world, let's call it a new world, because they perceive things differently. And then suddenly they're able to do a lot more after these leaps. And so this is why we call them wonder weeks, because there's this sudden week and all these wonders appear and they suddenly do a lot more, which is actually the outcome of this leap.
And how significant would you say these developmental leaps are to a baby's outlook of the world? I mean, they're pretty huge, right?
They are huge. They are the basis of everything we do in our lives, which does not mean that every baby makes these leaps. So no matter if you pay attention to your baby, if you leave them, let's say what they did in some years ago in studies, leave them in a dark corner and just feed them and just don't give them any tender care or love.
Yeah.
But the babies will go on to these leaps. But the problem is not like, would a baby make the leap? But what does your baby get out of the leap? Massive difference. So you want to help your baby.
What can parents do around these times to help their little ones?
Well, A is you have to know when they are. Because if you know when they are, you can prepare yourself. Because it is, you know, if I would talk to you, being a grown-up to a grown-up, I would completely understand how you perceive this world. You'd explain something, you know, about your daily life. I could kind of get how you perceive the world.
Yeah.
But with babies, it's so different. It doesn't matter how much you love your baby, how much you understand what each cry means. You're not able as a grown-up to perceive the way the world is perceived by a baby. So if you know when these leaps are, you could prepare yourself and read up on this next leap so you know what this leap is all about, what happens in the brain. And if you know what to search for and what to show to your baby, that's actually what helps. So the baby has this big question mark. It's called this new perception level.
Yeah.
He wants to find it out. He wants to explore this kind of perception of the world.
Yeah.
And if you know what to show to your baby, you know, it's much easier for him to get grips on that then, right?
Absolutely,
And that's what you do if you help your baby through these leaps. Very selfishly, you make your life much easier because the leaps don't go on that heavily and that long as they would normally without any help.
Right.
But B, you help your baby make all these brain connections and just make the most out of the leap. And three, if you do this together, if you rediscover the world together every leap, it's just the most magnificent exploring travel you'll ever make.
Well, I'm certainly going through some leaps myself at the moment, or one of the leaps. So, I can totally relate. So are there varying degrees of fussiness from baby to baby? I can imagine some babies are just super chilled and just don't seem to get affected by anything.
Well, you'd see leaps in every baby. Right. But you compare them to puberty, for example. Now, we all go through puberty, but some have, like, these phases where they go into drugs and turn into wild animals, and others just, you know, forget to hand in homework. It's a bit like this, you know, some are really fuzzy, some aren't. And then don't forget, there's 10 leaps in the first 20 months, which will also mean that it could be that your baby has real difficulties, really, really, really fuzzy, during one leap, but the next leap, you'll be like, oh, we nailed it. You know, this is easy.
Sure.
It doesn't mean that if one leap is hard, that your baby will find every leap hard. It doesn't mean that.
Okay, fab.
It depends.
Is there anything parents definitely shouldn't do? Like, what behaviours would be kind of the absolute no-no? I mean, I guess there's some obvious stuff like don't just ignore your child screaming and stuff, but any of the tips?
Well, you could say that's the logical stuff. That's, for me, that's the logical stuff. But it was only today.
Yeah.
We have this video on YouTube in which we say, you know, never let your baby cry it out. He doesn't cry for no reason. He needs you. And there was one person just commenting, no, this is so ridiculous. You should always let your baby cry because otherwise he will just get his way.
Wow.
So this is still there in this world. Yeah.
From a developmental perspective, would you say that actually, letting babies cry out is kind of damaging for them in that sense? Or?
Completely. Completely. Right. Yeah. So this is where the ninth leap is actually where, in Holland, we've got this word between baby and then you turn into toddler. But before there's one phase, which is actually the phase where Leap 9 is, which is to 1.5 years. For the first time at that point, they are able to try to reach their goal in a certain way.
Right, okay.
Which could be, for example, your first temper tantrum, but it could also be the same thing, actually, by doing something really sweet and getting your way with doing sweet. So from that age on, you can actually start to spoil your baby and give him something that at that point he should have waited for or...
Right, that's a year and a half,
about.
Is it?
Yeah, but before, you know, it's just not possible. Their brain does not allow them to think that far.
Right.
And that and the fact that there's people around who think that a couple of weeks old babies are in their cribs thinking, you know what? I'll start to shout really loudly.
And I'll get
then
what I
mommy
want.
Will come.
Yeah.
And then I will get my way. It's honestly, just, they can't think at that level.
No, I mean, I think I'm coming into, is it leap six now with my son, whereby he is not being manipulative or kind of, you know, knowing how to play with his emotions to get what he wants, but he is aware that he has got a voice and he's learning how to practice using it. So you know, actually to the day yesterday I've come into this new leap and it was quite remarkable. According to what your app says, he's gone into this fussy period, which my husband was like, wow, it's amazing you're getting a chance to chat with Zavira tomorrow to kind of to inform her how accurate the app is. But he started this kind of screaming to levels which I've never heard before, and then he's fine. And you're like, okay, you're not really upset now. But I know it's not. He's not doing it on purpose. He's just kind of playing around with his tone, I guess. Anyway,
and it could be playing around because speech is actually really one of the things he will discover around now.
Right.
But it could also be that he is actually discovering the fact that he is able to communicate with his voice instead of just crying, but with his voice to get you. Which may sound the same as, oh, so he's manipulating. No, he just wants to be near you, and he tries another method to be with you because he is clingy. He has this new whole world opening up to him. So, of course, he wants to be with you or your husband. He wants to be someone he really knows.
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't mean the fact that he's actually calling you or shouting for you or, you know, doing whatever he wants with his voice to get you doesn't mean he is consciously manipulating you to get you. No, he just wants comfort, which is tender love and care, which is something we all want when we're, you know, when we're in a very difficult phase, right?
Of course. It's a natural thing. So why is it that you request people to measure from their due date as opposed to their birth date? Because a few of my friends kind of said, oh, actually, I typed in the date my son was born, and that seemed to pan out more accurately. So why is that?
So the thing is, brain the brain growth is just a matter of maturity. So let's say the extremes. For example, your baby is born a month early. It doesn't mean that during birth, this month early than expected, the brain goes into fast forward a month, right? And on the other hand, if you would be 2 weeks or 3 weeks after your due date, it doesn't mean the brain doesn't develop anymore these last 2 or 3 weeks. It's a maturity thing. It's pure biological cells, which, right, is that a English term?
Yeah.
Which, right, and they do that whether they're in the womb or outside of the womb.
Right.
Now, what we always say is you have to take 1 or 2 weeks leeway with every leap.
Right.
So if your due date is actually close to the date you actually gave birth to, there you wouldn't see a lot of difference. And then that's up to you to really pinpoint where in this 1 or 2 week leeway, depending on the leap, you are at. So these people who gave birth, for example, very close to the due date might discover that during your path, which every leap you find out more specifically when your leaps are within this 1 or 2 week range.
Yeah.
And it could be that it's the due date is that the actual birthday was a bit more correct. But that's because they're so close, and that's why we have this leeway of both sides.
Right, fantastic. That's kind of clears that one up. I mean, I have to say, as again, it's I've typed in my due date, and it's pretty spot on. So, but very briefly, I know it was your parents that originally came up with this research. What did they undertake to kind of gain these insights? I'm sure it was a very long process.
They went to Jane Goodall to study baby mother chimp interactions, and at that point, which was, you know, 40 years ago or something, they didn't, more because I wasn't born, so it was 50 years ago. There wasn't email, there was just snail mail, right? And so they got this massive amount of money from the Dutch government to go there and study things, and they won all kinds of prizes and stuff. So they were there, and they actually discovered that one of the other persons who was there was doing the exact same research. So they were literally stuck in the jungle in the middle of nowhere, having no assignment.
Wow.
And then it was Jane Goodall and Hugo von Laouwijk, who was her partner at that time, who said, you know, why don't you go in this without any hypothesis? Why don't you just observe everything you see, and then after 3 months, see if you can find some kind of pattern?
Yeah.
And they discovered leaps in baby chimps, which is much easy visible, because when your child goes in a leap, like you said now, you wouldn't hit him, push him away, or have, you know, you would maybe have moments of, why did they start this?
Yeah.
But you would not do anything to your baby. While a chimp mum, if this baby is clingy or cranky, would just smack it around. So my parents saw patterns of, you know, of real discussions or even physical discussions between mum and baby chimps.
Right.
And then suddenly, after this phase of in which they just smacked each other, you know, the baby chimp did away a lot more. So they discovered leaps in chimps.
Right.
And then they thought, if it's in chimps, must be in humans too. Yeah. So they came back from Tanzania and they started to observe mother-infant relationships.
Gosh, that's what an amazing journey. So these leaps consistent for babies all over the world, like, you know, in different
they
cultures.
Are. Yeah, that's the beauty about leaps. It doesn't matter which religion you are, from which skin color, if your mom is lesbian, home, or it doesn't matter. Everyone is exactly the same with leaps.
So what do you do now with Wonder Weeks? You've got the book, you've got the app.
And then we're trying to help people around the globe. So I started, my parents published the book in some countries, and I tried to roll it out around the globe, which is actually now really done. And together with four other work-at-home moms, we try to help mothers literally around the globe. So we're working 24-hour shifts and trying to get the message across.
Well, many of my listeners just want to say a massive thank you, because your content has been so useful, especially during those very difficult phases.
It's so lovely to hear. There's this moment, if you start a company like this, you know, you wonder, can I do this? Can I actually reach people around the globe? Then if you hear messages like this, it's just heartwarming.
Oh, well, you know, we wanted to relay that to you because, I mean, it just does seem to be so spot on. It's fascinating. And what I might do, Zavira, is get any of your kind of links for your website and just how people can find out more. If I could get those from you, I'll put those on the Mothership Radio Reverb Facebook page. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
Radio Reverb. You are listening to The Mothership with me, Josie Booth. As always, you can get in touch via the Radio Reverb website. Feel free to drop me a line there. You can go on our Facebook page, which is just The Mothership Radio Reverb. And if you want to listen to any previous shows, a lot of them are listed on Mixcloud. That's under my name, Josie Glitterbosher. Up for you now, I've got an interview with our local panel of ladies filling us in on their thoughts on growth spurts. We've got
Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah, with a baby attached to your breast at the moment. And
Holly.
Lovely Holly, who's got little Reggie sitting next to her with a little chunk of sweet potato in his hand, looking very content. So, ladies, this month we've spoken to Zavira, who's author of The Wonder Weeks, about baby development and their kind of developmental leaps. Another big area of change is growth spurts. Now, I don't know about you guys, but it felt like the early days, they were just always going through a growth spurt. It was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months. Just before growth spurts, babies are meant to seem a bit sleepier than usual, but they also get a bit clingy. Did you guys notice that in the boys?
Yeah, I mean, at the start, he was just fed. So I think that was a sign of the first growth spurt. And then I would say lately, the last one, he was incredibly clingy. I couldn't even put him in the high chair without crying. And you could tell because that kind of lasted for a week and then all of a sudden it just stopped again. Yeah. So they kind of come in fits and spurts, really.
And those early days, because you haven't really experienced it before, you kind of think, oh my gosh, is this it? Are they just going to be like extra clingy or extra sleepy forever? Or is this going to wear off? But it obviously does and you kind of get used to it. Oh, did you notice changes in Reggie with the early growth spurts?
Well, to be honest, it was a bit of a running joke because Reggie was always asleep whenever anyone saw him anyway. So I didn't notice too much more sleeping. But it just seems like they're constantly growing. It just felt like every week something different was happening and you're always trying to pinpoint what it is, but you've got no idea really. They were always trying to find excuses for what they're doing, but who knows?
Yeah. Complete minefield, isn't it? My little man definitely seemed to get clingy and kind of agitated over these periods, kind of more than usual. Did you notice Leo, Sarah, getting kind of quite grumpy and quite stroppy and stuff?
Yeah, he would. His mood would just change a bit. And I mean, I think for us, it was mainly the feeding. But as he got a bit older, as I say, I couldn't put him down anywhere. He would be... that's him going now. He would just be whinging more. And it really was more of a whinging rather than the crying. They're just not happy.
Holes, did you notice, did Reggie at all get kind of more clingy, more grumpy? Or was he quite content?
We actually had... The first time I've really noticed him be that like that was over Christmas. He suddenly started getting really, really clingy and wanted to be with me all the time. Yeah. And there was a definite great going there, and his sleep went quite bad, and we've kind of come out the other side of it now. But yeah, there's definitely periods where he is more clingy. It's hard to even remember now. You kind of wish I'd... Yeah, it does, yeah. And I know these things have happened, but I can't quite pinpoint when they were. But he definitely... I mean, I think what Reggie's done consistently is be inconsistent. So I kind of put everything down to some kind of growth spurt, whether it's, you know, going off his food or not sleeping as well or whatever it might be. I think it's just growth spurting all the time, yeah.
And so I guess one of the key things is that they feed constantly, and I found that quite challenging because I felt that my milk supply was already quite low, so having to then try and basically put him on the boob even more to try and get more, it just was a bit of a struggle. Did you experience those spikes in feeding, and kind of what did you do to, how did you cope with those?
I mean, I actually mentally struggled with that quite a lot because I felt like I'd lost my independence. I was literally strapped to the sofa for hours upon hours, and actually looking back now, I wish I'd just used that time to watch a box set, eat as much food, like you don't get that chance much in your life. Yeah. But once I got over the acceptance of that, it was a lot easier, and I just sort of sat and fed, and you know, you realise that's just completely normal actually.
I think we've kind of seemed to kind of come out of the key early growth spurts now anyway, but bring on the next ones. Holes, did you struggle with the extra feeding over the growth spurts, and did you how did you kind of overcome any of those periods?
Yeah, especially when they were really little, like sometimes you were just feeding for hours and hours, well, what felt like hours and hours, and you'd stop and then 45 minutes later you had to do another big feed. So it's really hard, and really like Sarah said, you kind of resent it almost at the time a little bit, and you're kind of like, oh god, I can't wait for this to be over, whereas actually now you kind of miss those days a little bit. So it was quite hard to mentally prepare yourself for it. I don't know how people do it when they've got two children, that is all I'll say. It was challenging to be able to keep up with how much he wanted, but get there in the end.
And so I guess our babies have come through the early months of growth spurts. The developmental leaps are still a thing though. Do you notice when your babies are going through actual developmental leaps? Does it feel like it kind of blurs into one?
I must admit I didn't before, but recently, literally to the day where he was meant to be going through a leap.
Is this according to like the Wonder Weeks app?
Yeah, I've been sort of following, but I actually thought it wasn't working to his time frame. Apart from the last one, he was very clingy, very grizzled over Christmas. And then literally all of a sudden one day, just completely changed. He's much more chilled out. Things like putting him in the high chair when he was screaming, just stop doing that. And that's literally been to the day. So I think as he's getting older, it's easier to notice that.
Yeah. And Holes, have you noticed specific changes when he's had developmental leaps? Have you known when he's had developmental leaps, or have you not really followed that?
I've not used it at all. So I've kind of, it's often like Sarah and Chloe will tell me something and then I'll be like, oh, maybe that's what's happened then. But I have to be honest, I haven't followed at all with anything like that. Yeah. I find with me, it would be a bit like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I don't want to be told that I'm going to have a stormy week, because then I'd be like, oh God, the end of the world is coming. So I've just found it easier to bury my head in the sand and just take each day as it comes. So I haven't noticed.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, I've definitely seen key spikes with Phoenix's behaviour and his sleep, actually, which have been quite accurate with regards to Wonder Week stuff. But, yeah, it's quite interesting. I guess, as Zavira touched upon, babies do manage leaps in different ways. So while one baby can cope with one leap okay, then the next might be a bit more challenging. There's a couple of things that are happening with Phoenix at the moment. So apparently, according to Wonder Weeks, leap six is where he's noticing categorizations of things more, and so that's kind of a new change that's happened with his brain and how his kind of brain is actually growing, and physically his head does look bigger in size. It's really weird. They do say that with these leaps sometimes there is an actual physical growth, so that's interesting. But he's also in the age where he's going from three naps down to two, which is changing his behavior as well, which affects sleep at night. So
I would say with these leaps as well, I got really frustrated at the beginning of the last one because his behavior was just quite difficult to handle, and it was quite a rapid change. So from the app you can actually add the leap dates into your calendar, so now I'll know when the next one's coming and hopefully be able to handle it a little better.
That's really interesting.
Really handy tip, yeah, because it can kind of shock you and all of a sudden they just start screaming at everything.
Yeah.
So it's a good tip to have.
Reggie did like this weird dinosaur roaring thing where he was just going and just like aggressively shouting at everything, and apparently that's where them discovering their voices as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think last time we met, Reggie and Leo were having a shout off and doing that to each other. So yeah.
So I guess these changes kind of afterwards, you're like, actually, that does make sense. Like that key thing that they've actually discussed about this new developmental leap, you can see the physical kind of outcome of that. So, well, that's all, ladies. Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Cool. Thank you, Nora.
Thank you.
Thank you to our panel of ladies, and thank you to all of our guests on this month's show. Hope you guys have enjoyed listening. Don't forget, go to the Facebook page. It's just The Mothership Radio Reverb. Give us some likes, send us a message, tell me what you like listening to, and I'll give you some love back. Adios, amigos.